This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust.
My parents died within a year of each other, you know, which is horrible. I didn't have money to be able to cost the coffins. I mean, even the cost of sort of buying flowers. I didn't even have a suit, you know. I felt so embarrassed that I let my parents down.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters. I'm Chris Fitch. Every day in the UK, around 1,500 people die, a daily certainty that surrounds us all. Yet, as Jamesy and Deborah explain in this special Vulnerability Voices episode, despite the steady presence of bereavement in our lives, individuals, organisations and businesses still often appear to be completely underprepared for the multiple challenges that death can bring when it does arrive. So together with Michael Hilton from Three Hands Insight, today we enter the world of bereavement, a place where deep personal grief and organisational processes can often collide and clash, where lifelong partners and carers now have to deal with suddenly having no one left to care for, and where not just single, but multiple bereavements can bring about both crushing financial pressures and feelings of shame about not doing the right thing to mark a loss.
We are here today to talk about bereavement and to understand how businesses can best support someone after the death of a loved one. I'm joined by two lived experts, Deborah and Jamesy, who are here and willing to share some of their own experiences with us. Thank you both so much for being here today. Jamesy, maybe we could start with you. Could you just give us a bit of a sense of your experiences when it comes to bereavement and I guess a sense of the impact that has had on your life over the years?
But yeah, I mean, I've came from quite a sort of chaotic background. I went through times of addiction, very poor mental health, instability, which has led to times of poverty when I just haven't had any money at all. And I'm sure a lot of people these days can sort of get on board with how that feels. And then you have bereavement. When you put them both together, you end up with a very sort of unpleasant situation. I mean, bereavement always comes at them. It never comes at a good time, does it? And I suppose when you haven't got any financial backing to your name as well, it just makes it that little bit worse. You know, it's I was living hand to mouth for quite a few years. And I've had several sort of major bereavements in my life. Both my parents died within a year of each other, and I lost two brothers in a very close periods as well. And it just gets very, very hard to sort of to cope with these times. Just all the little things that seem to sort of mount up, and it's just sort of it. Horrible, heartbreaking situation, you know, it leaves a big hole in your heart.
Thank you, Jamesy, and thanks for being so open with us. And as you say, that sense of the huge impact it has, but how it combines with all these other factors, whether that's poverty or mental health and other things going on. And let's come back to that in a minute. But let me just give Deborah, can I just give you a chance just to sort of share a sense of your experiences when it comes to, I know, caring and bereavement?
Yeah, sure. Well, my journey really began when I became a carer for my dad who had dementia. And that was very much an unfolding journey. It then sort of came into a season of bereavement. So it was a process. Initially, I was in a supportive role for dad. But then there was a very sudden transition almost overnight as his dementia deteriorated quite suddenly. And he had a fall with an operation following. So that was a huge impact on the everyday, just that change for both of us. And I had to sort of navigate the care sector, if you like, at great speed, working with care agencies, care services and businesses for that everyday life I've been in. So that was a huge transition. And it was just sort of coming to terms with that. And I think I remember I sort of brought with me even to now, as I'm sort of rebuilding in life after care, the change of roles and identity, because I was very much a daughter in a supportive role. And then suddenly I had to become a full-time carer and all that that brings with it. And that transition of identity, I think, was very challenging. And the care role began to sort of gradually eclipse that. So that's something I brought with me even to now, and I'm sort of working through. So that was a very challenging thing, is that whole journey, I think.
And then, and I think it's very important not to think about the two separately, that, you know, for a lot of people, it starts as a friend or family relationship, it becomes a caring relationship. And then obviously on the death of that person, it's a whole other host of things to think about and deal with. And I get, what sort of impact, if you're happy to talk about it, does it have after that loved one has died? What does it mean for the kind of getting through the day to day and the reality of your daily life?
Yeah, I think it is a huge impact. There's a huge impact when you become a carer, as I mentioned, but then when you lose that person, there is some sort of anticipatory grief, if you like, because you're involved in palliative care, and with dementia you can see it worsening, but it's still such a transition. And I think for me, I almost felt in the impact of the everyday that I was still a carer. It's just that person isn't there anymore, but I was caring for their home. I was caring for all the administration that comes with a bereavement. I was caring for their memories and their things, and now moving on at their legacy. So I still felt that I was a carer, but there wasn't that support there and the person wasn't there. So that was quite a surreal feeling. But in the midst of that, I had to navigate, as we say, all the administration that comes with a death. So you have to be very practical, but you're also trying to come to terms with this huge transition and a sense of loss as well. There was a huge sense of loss. And for me, particularly a loss of belonging, because I'd lost both parents at that point. And again, I carry that to this day. I'm sort of trying to work with that in, again, life after care. Who am I now? Because I was changed so much by the care experience and the bereavement. But what communities do I belong to? What groups am I in? So that sense of belonging has been really challenging to start to rebuild and work with. So they're the definers, I think, the sense of belonging and just that impact on the personal working through your reflections, your challenges of loss, but being very practical as well and working with businesses and working through the administration.
Well, that combination, as you say, of the practical admin and that stuff, but against a backdrop of a very profound change. And and obviously a bereavement impacts everyone differently, but those two pieces often sit together, and we can talk a bit about where does business sit in this big picture in a minute. But yeah, James, I was interested in your sense of the kind of impacts and what it.
Yeah, means. I mean, it's quite different from Deborah's, and I think my parents died within a year of each other, you know, which is horrible. My mom had been battling with cancer for years. I think she was down to about under four stone when she died, you know. And in a way, we were so relieved when she died, because she was just hanging on and hanging on and hanging on. And it was just horrible, you know. And then quite often, as is the case, if it's a very close male and female couple of a similar age, if the woman dies, quite often the man will die within about a year. You know, it's just one of them. And my dad did, you know, and his death was a lot gentler. And I think, again, we're kind of relieved, because he didn't want to live without me, mother, you know. But I feel that the way I couldn't help them, I mean, I wasn't a full-time carer, and I didn't have money to be able to sort of put into sort of the funeral costs, the cost of coffins. I mean, even the cost of sort of buying flowers. I didn't even have a suit, you know, all these kinds of things to go at the funeral. I felt so embarrassed that I let my parents down. And there's still this big sense of, there's always going to be the sense of loss, but there's such a sense of shame, I feel, that I couldn't have done better, and I couldn't have stood up and done more for my parents, you know. That I think once they both died, I kind of ran away from my family. I sort of really disassociated from all of them. I just kept away from, and a lot of that was shame, you know, and a lot of that was embarrassment and being like the sort of the one who couldn't pull their weight and the one who couldn't do the right thing. But looking back on it now, I think there's probably a lot more that could have been done by people like the undertakers, the funeral providers. It could have been. I'm not saying that people should foot my bills kind of thing, but I think there could be a lot sort of gentler ways to do things. Definitely. That sort of makes the journey from the people who are left behind a bit easier. And I always find it quite sort of amusing that before you're born, you have a lot of care, and your mother has all the sort of it's prenatal care and going to sort of baby and mother classes and that kind of thing. And throughout life, you have the systems that care for you. You have school, you have education, you have the welfare state. And suddenly when you die, there isn't really much in place to help you. You know, it's like, it's just gone, that sort of duty of care like drops off and you're dead, which is quite obvious, really, but maybe it shouldn't. Maybe there should be a bit more in place to sort of, to give people a bit of a dignified send-off, and also to allow their families, if they're going through poverty, to not have to carry the shame of not being able to provide for that sort of period of their, I'm going to say their life, but it's not their life because it's the death, but you know what I mean. Yeah.
Thank you. Moving slightly onto that, you know, you both talked about, and Deborah in particular, the scale of the sort of admin and the interactions and everything else that comes following a death. And where does dealing with business fit in? Because there's so much going on, and actually, like, how much of a part of bereavement is the need to deal with businesses and sort things out, Deborah, in your experience?
It is a huge part, and it's quite an immediate part as well, because you have to inform them, obviously, of a death. And I did choose to do that individually. I know that you can do that as a collective and sort of just tell once, but I did that individually. I spoke to each business, utilities, insurances, telecoms, those everyday essential services. And that's quite hard. Well, you have that interaction, and it does vary because it depends on how you are that day, and it depends on how the company work with bereaved people. But generally, my interactions, I have to say, were very positive, actually, on the care journey and then walking into the bereavement. They were positive, and it helped me because I'd already set up permissions to speak to some of the essential services before Dad's dementia worsened. So that was really helpful, because those permissions and pathways were established beforehand. So I'd sort of had dialogue, if you like, with those services while I was managing Dad's accounts. So it was a little bit easier for me as I went in to deal with that bereavement admin. But as there was just one provider, I have to say, who was very good, very helpful and positive on the whole journey, a seamless journey, really, from care through to bereavement. And that was one of the utility providers, Eon Next. They were very helpful, and I was just able to deal with them in a very proactive and productive way. They were helpful, they were compassionate, sensitive. And they also work with a partner company. I think it's quite an established relationship. So when you speak to them and you set up all the practicalities around the accounts and who's going to continue overseeing them, you then are referred on to another company and you work with them more long term. So they sort of walk out the journey with you. And I found that enormously helpful into the administration of the estate. And I'm still working with them now. So, you know, thank you, Elon Next. That's been very positive. But generally, I think I had good interactions with most of the essential businesses, but it really helped if they had a trained team. They did mostly for bereavement. For care, that sometimes differed. And I suppose the big ask there is, can you provide for carers in the same way that you do for the bereaved, dedicated trained teams? Because during the care with Eon Next, I had someone who I could email or phone directly. So there was always that contact. And that was a huge weight off my mind. So if businesses can provide those dedicated trained teams, that really helps. And giving very concise information, brief information, but clear. And I think timescales as well. How long have you got to sort something out? I remember telecoms giving me 3 months. Gosh, that was great because I had 3 months to just reflect, think, what do I want to do? Do I want to continue that account? What practicalities are involved? So I think if that support is there, and if there's ever a challenge, always trying to work with the person and find a way around it. So that was the sort of everyday, as well as coping with the loss. You're having to sort of make those decisions as well and interact with businesses quite consistently.
Yeah, and I think you've brought to life just everything that's going on when you're following the death of someone close, and there's so much going on for that person, and the piece with the business is kind of significant and important and practical, but it's just one small piece, and that piece can either be made easier and helpful and positive in the kind of way that you've experienced, Deborah, or it can just add to everything else that's going on, and there's such a sort of important place the business to get that right there. I could talk to you both for another half an hour, but I'm not going to. I'm going to ask you a final and important question, which is, you know, you've shared a lot. You've been so open about the impact. You've talked about businesses, but for the businesses that are listening, what's the kind of one big ask that you would have for those on the line from financial services company, utilities, others? What's the one big thing you'd ask them to do to really help those who are suffering a bereavement and give them the best possible support?
As I mentioned, I think dedicated and trained teams for carers and for the bereaved. So we have that seamless journey that goes throughout. People have empathy and can really work with you as an individual so that you feel valued and heard in that interaction. And that does take experience. And clear signposting and just giving you time, just so there are not too many immediate pressures. Dedicated teams, I think dedicated trained teams would be my big ask. And just really hearing and valuing people in the midst of their care journey or their season of bereavement.
And seeing those two as in many cases a journey that can lead from one to the other. So it's sort of not two separate things to think about. It's working out how the two can come together when they need to. Yeah. Thank you both very much.
And that was Deborah Jamesy and Michael Hilton from Three Hands Insight. If you want to find out more about Three Hands' work in bringing together people with lived experience and business, make sure to visit threehandsinsight.co.uk. And that's it for today. So until next time, be prepared, be present, and keep on remembering that vulnerability matters. Vulnerability Matters was brought to you by the Money Advice Trust. It was presented by Chris Fitch and produced by Phil King.